Audiolibros en inglés. Cuentos clásicos leídos en inglés. Little Thumbling by Charles Perrault. Once upon a time, there was a woodcutter and his wife who had 7 children, all boys. The eldest was but 10 years old, and the youngest only 7. People wondered how the woodcutter had so many children so near in age, but the explanation was simple. Several of them were twins. He and his wife were very poor, and their 7 children were a great burden to them, since none of them was yet able to earn a livelihood. What troubled them still more was that the youngest was very delicate and seldom spoke, which they considered a proof of stupidity, rather than of good sense. He was very diminutive and, when first born, scarcely bigger than 1's thumb, and so they called him Little Thumbling. This poor child was the scapegoat of the house and was blamed for everything that happened. Nevertheless, he was the shrewdest and the most sensible of all his brothers, and if he spoke little, he listened a great deal. Then came a year of bad harvest, and the famine was so severe that these poor people determined to get rid of their children. One evening, when they were all in bed, the woodcutter was sitting over the fire with his wife. He said to her, with an aching heart, "You see plainly that we can no longer find food for our children. I cannot let them die of hunger before my very eyes. I have made up my mind to take them to the woods tomorrow and there lose them. It will be easily done, for while they are busy digging for mushrooms, we have only to run away unseen by them." "Ah!" exclaimed the woodcutter's wife, "can you find the heart to lose your own children?" In vain her husband reminded her of their great poverty. She would not consent to the deed. She was poor, but she was their mother. After a while, however, having thought of the misery it would be to see them die of hunger, she assented to her husband's proposal and went weeping to bed. Little Thumbling had overheard all they said, for, as he lay in his bed, he realized that they were talking of their affairs. So he got up quietly and crept under his mother's stool, to listen to what they were saying without being seen. He went to bed again, but did not sleep a wink the rest of the night, thinking what he should do. He got up early and went down to the banks of the stream. There he filled his pockets with small white pebbles and then returned home. They all set out together, but Little Thumbling did not say a word to his brothers of what he had overheard. They entered a very thick forest, where, at 10 paces distant, they could not see one another. The woodcutter began to cut wood, and the children to pick up brushwood for the mushrooms. The father and mother, seeing them busy at work, gradually stole farther and farther away from them, and then suddenly ran off down a little winding path. When the children found themselves all alone, they began to scream and cry with all their might. Little Thumbling let them scream, well knowing how he could get them home again, for on their way to the forest, he had dropped all along the road the little white pebbles he had in his pockets. He said, "Have no fear, brothers. Father and mother have left us here, but I will take you safely home if you follow me." They followed him, and he led them back to the house by the same road that they had taken to the forest. They were afraid to go inside at once, but placed themselves close to the door to listen to what their father and mother were saying. As luck would have it, just at the moment that the woodcutter and his wife reached home, the lord of the manor sent them 10 crowns. It was money he had owed them for a long time, and which they had given up all hope of receiving. This was new life to them, for the poor things were actually starving. The woodcutter immediately sent his wife to the butcher's, and as it was many days since they had tasted meat, she bought 3 times as much as was sufficient for 2 people's supper. When they had appeased their hunger, the woodcutter's wife said, "Alas, where are our poor children now? They would fare merrily on what we have left. But it was you, William, who would lose them. Truly did I say we would repent it. What are they now doing in the forest? Alas, heaven help me. Perhaps the wolves have already devoured them. What a cruel man you are to have lost your children." The woodcutter began at last to lose his temper, for she repeated over 20 times that they would repent the deed, and that she had said it would be so. He threatened to beat her if she did not hold her tongue. It was not that the woodcutter was not, perhaps, even more sorry than his wife, but that she made so much noise about it. He was like many others, who are fond of people who say the right thing, but are annoyed by those who are always in the right. The wife was all in tears. "Alas, where are my children now? My poor children!" She uttered her last cry so loudly that the children, who were at the door, heard her and began to call out all together, "Here we are! Here we are!" She rushed to the door to open it, and embracing them, exclaimed, "How thankful I am to see you again, my dear children! You are very tired and hungry, and you, little Peter, how dirty you are! Come here and let me wash you." Peter was her eldest son, and she loved him better than all the rest, because he was red-headed, and she was rather red-haired herself. They sat down to supper and ate with an appetite that delighted their father and mother, to whom they related how frightened they had been in the forest, all speaking at the same time. The good people were overjoyed to see their children around them once more, and their joy lasted as long as the 10 crowns. When the money was spent, however, they fell back into their former state of misery, and resolved to lose their children again. To make quite sure of doing so this time, they determined to lead them much further from home than they had before. Although they tried to talk of this secretly, they were overheard by Little Thumbling. He decided to get out of the difficulty by the same means as the first time. But despite getting up very early to collect the little pebbles, he did not succeed in his object. The house door was double locked. He was at his wits' end what to do. His mother gave each of them a piece of bread for their breakfast, and it occurred to him that he might make the bread take the place of the pebbles, strewing crumbs along the path as they went, and so he put his piece in his pocket. The father and mother set out to the thickest and darkest part of the forest. As soon as they had done so, they turned into a bypath and left them there. Little Thumbling did not trouble himself much, for he believed he could easily find his way back by help of the crumbs which he had scattered wherever he had passed. But he was greatly surprised to find not a single crumb left. The birds had come and picked them all up. The poor children were now indeed in great distress. The further they wandered, the deeper they plunged into the forest. Night came, and a great wind arose, which filled them with terror. They fancied they heard the howling of wolves from all sides, running towards them to devour them. They scarcely dared to speak or look behind them. Then came a heavy rain, which drenched them to the skin. They slipped at every step, tumbling into the mud. Little Thumbling climbed up a tree to try if he could see anything from the top of it. Looking about on all sides, he saw a little light, like that of a candle. but it was a long way off, on the other side of the forest. He came down again, and when he had reached the ground, he could no longer see the light. He despaired at this, but walked on with his brothers for some time in the direction of the light. Suddenly, he caught sight of it again as they emerged from the forest. At length, they reached the house where the candle was shining. They knocked loudly at the door, and a good woman came to open it. She asked them what they wanted. Little Thumbling told her they were poor children who had lost their way in the forest, and who begged a night of lodgings for charity's sake. The woman, seeing they were all so pretty, began to weep and said to them, "Alas, my poor children, to what a place have you come? Don't you know that this is the house of an ogre who eats little children?" "Alas," replied Little Thumbling, who trembled from head to foot, as indeed did all his brothers, "what shall we do? We shall certainly be all eaten up by the wolves tonight, if you do not give us shelter." "In that case, we would rather be eaten by the ogre. Perhaps he might have pity upon us, if you are kind enough to ask him." The ogre's wife thought that she might be able to hide them from her husband till the next morning. She let the children come in, and led them where they could warm themselves by a good fire, where a whole sheep was roasting on the spit for the ogre's supper. Just as they were beginning to get warm, they heard two or three loud knocks at the door. It was the ogre who had come home. His wife immediately made the children hide under the bed and went to open the door. The ogre first asked if his supper was ready, and if she had drawn the wine, and with that he sat down to his meal. The mutton was all but raw, but he liked it the better for that. He sniffed right and left, saying that he smelt fresh meat. "It must be the calf I just skinned," said his wife.
"I tell you, I smell fresh meat," replied the ogre, giving an angry glance at his wife. "There is something here I do not understand."
With these words, he rose from the table and went straight towards the bed.
"Ah," he exclaimed, "so this is how you seek to deceive me, you wretched woman. I do not know what hinders me from eating you also. It is well for you that you are such an old creature, but here is some game which comes in handy, and will serve to feast three of my ogre friends, who are soon coming to pay me a visit."
He dragged the children from under the bed, one after the other. They fell upon their knees, begging for mercy. But they had to deal with the most cruel of all the ogres, who, far from feeling pity for them, devoured them already with his eyes. The ogre told his wife that they would be dainty bits when she had made a good sauce for them. He went and took up a large knife, and as he came towards the children again, he whetted it on a long stone held in his left hand. He had already seized one of them when his wife said to him, "Why are you doing that at this hour of the night? Will it not be time enough tomorrow?"
"Hold your peace," replied the ogre. "Right now they will be the more tender."
"But you already have too much food," continued his wife. "Here are a calf, two sheep, and half a pig."
"You are right," said the ogre. "Give them a good supper, that they may keep plump, and put them to bed."
The good woman was rejoiced, and brought them plenty of supper, but they could not eat. They were so overcome with fright. As for the ogre, he seated himself to drink again, delighted to think he had such a treat in store for his friends. He drained a dozen goblets, more than usual, which made him feel sleepy and heavy, and made him go to bed. The ogre had 7 daughters, who were still young children. These little ogresses had the most beautiful complexions, as they lived on fresh meat like their father. But they had very small round gray eyes, hooked noses, and very large mouths, with long teeth, exceedingly sharp and wide apart. They were not very wicked yet, but they promised to become so, for they already began to bite little children, that they might suck their blood. They had been sent to bed early, and were all 7 in a large bed, each wearing a crown of gold on her head. In the same room was another bed of the same size. It was in this bed that the ogre's wife put the 7 little boys to sleep, after which she went to bed herself. Little Thumbling had noticed that the ogre's daughters had golden crowns on their heads. He was afraid that the ogre might repent not having killed him and his brothers that evening. So he got up in the middle of the night, took off his own nightcap and those of his brothers, went very softly, and placed them on the heads of the ogre's daughters, first taking off their golden crowns. He placed the golden crowns on his brothers and himself, in order that the ogre might mistake them for his daughters, and his daughters for the boys whom he wanted to kill. Everything turned out as Little Thumbling had expected. The ogre awoke at midnight, and regretted having put off till morning what he might have done the evening before. He, therefore, jumped suddenly out of bed, and seizing his great knife, said, "Let us go, and see how the young rogues are getting on. I will not think twice about it this time." So he stole on tiptoes up to his daughter's bedroom, and went up to the bed in which lay the little boys. They were all asleep except Little Thumbling, who was dreadfully frightened when the ogre put his hand on his head to feel it, as he had in turn felt those of his brothers. The ogre, feeling the golden crowns, said, "Truly, I was about to do a pretty piece of work. It's plain I drank too much wine last night." He then went to the bed where his daughter slept, and having felt the little nightcaps that belonged to the boys, he cried, "Aha! Here are our fine young fellows. Let us to work boldly." So saying, without pause, he cut the throats of his 7 daughters. Well satisfied with his deed, he returned and lay down beside his wife. As soon as Little Thumbling heard the ogre snoring, he awoke his brothers and bade them dress themselves quickly and follow him. They crept down into the garden and jumped over the wall. They ran nearly all night long, trembling the whole time and not knowing where they were going. The ogre, awaking in the morning, said to his wife, "Go upstairs and dress those young scamps you took in last night." The ogress was astonished at her husband's kindness, never guessing what he meant, and only fancying that he wished her to go and put on their clothes. She went upstairs, where she was horrified to find that her own children had been killed. The first thing she did was to faint, for it is the first thing that almost everyone does in similar circumstances. The ogre, fearing that his wife would be too long over the job he had given her to do, went upstairs to help her. His surprise was not less than had been his wife's, when his eyes fell on the frightful spectacle.
"Ah, what have I done?" he exclaimed. "The young wretches will pay for it, and that at once."
He threw a jug full of water in his wife's face, and having brought her to, said,
"Quick, fetch me my 7-league boots. I will go after them and catch them."
He set out, and after running in every direction, came at last upon the track of the poor children, who were just 100 yards from their father's house. They saw the ogre striding from hill to hill and stepping over rivers as easily as if they were the smallest brooks. Little Thumbling, who caught sight of a hollow rock close by, hid his brothers in it and crept in after them, keeping his eye on the ogre all the while. The ogre, feeling very tired with his long journey to no purpose, for 7-league boots are very fatiguing to the wearer, thought he would like to rest. By chance, he sat down on the very rock in which the little boys had concealed themselves. He was quite worn out, and had not rested long before he fell asleep, snoring so dreadfully that the poor children were just as frightened as they were when he took up the great knife to cut their throats. Little Thumbling was not so much alarmed, and told his brothers to run quickly into the house while the ogre was sound asleep, and not to worry about him. They took his advice and soon reached home. Little Thumbling then went up to the ogre, gently pulled off his boots, and put them on himself. The boots were very large and very long. But as they were enchanted boots, they had the quality of becoming larger or smaller according to the leg of the person who wore them, so that they fitted him as if they had been made for him. He went straight to the ogre's house, where he found the wife weeping over her murdered daughters. "Your husband," said Little Thumbling to her, "is in great danger. He has been seized by a band of robbers, who have sworn to kill him if he does not give them all his gold and silver. Just as they had their daggers at his throat, he saw me and begged me to come and tell you what had happened to him. That you were to give me all his ready money without keeping back any of it, or they will kill him without mercy. As time pressed, he insisted on my taking his 7-league boots, which you see that I have on, in order that I might make haste, and also that you might be sure I was not imposing upon you." The good woman, very much alarmed, immediately gave him all the money she could find, for the ogre was not a bad husband to her, although he ate little children. Little Thumbling, thus laden with all the ogre's wealth, hastened back to his father's house, where he was received with great joy. There are many people, however, who differ in their account of this part of the story, who pretend that Little Thumbling never stole the ogre's money, that he really only took the 7-league boots, as he felt no scruple in doing this, seeing that the ogre used them expressly for running after little children. These people assert that they have heard it from good authority, and that they have eaten and drunk in the woodcutter's house. They assure us that when Little Thumbling had put on the ogre's boots, he went to court, where he knew the king was in much trouble about an army which was within 200 leagues of the city, where they would be anxious to hear the result of the battle. They say he went to find the king, and told him that, if he wished it, he would bring him back news of the army before the end of the day. The king promised him a large sum of money if he did so. Little Thumbling brought news that very evening. This first journey made him well known, and he got whatever he chose to ask, for the king paid him most liberally for carrying his orders to the army. A great number of ladies also gave him whatever he wished, in return for news of their lovers, and this brought him in the greatest gain. After he had been a courier for some time, and had saved a great deal of money, he returned to his father. It is impossible to imagine the joy of his family at seeing him again. He made them all comfortable, bought newly made offices for his father and brothers, and by these means established them all, making his own way at court at the same time. The end. Often it is the handsome boy made alone his father's joy, while the tiny, timid child is neglected or reviled. Notwithstanding, sometimes he lives of all the prop to be.